Chapter 7. Grandma Nora, November. Ray couldn't wait to see Grandma Nora. Holidays with his family could be particularly brutal. But Grandma Nora, his only surviving grandparent, was the one saving grace. Even though she lived an excruciating 8-hour drive away, the trip was always worth it. This year, especially after the wedding incident, he was desperate to see her. He had no one to talk to about what had happened. He hadn't said anything to Aiden. He was too embarrassed. Part of him thought that by telling Aiden, Aiden would somehow agree with Uncle Roger and not invite him to other gigs, would see Ray as a liability instead of a great musical partner. He had no close friends to confide in. Telling his mother or his siblings seemed equally impossible. When he'd come home from the wedding, he'd handed his mother the $10-$20 bills and stitched together for the twins the brief glimpses he'd had of the house and grounds, its high ceilings, cut flowers on every conceivable surface, oriental rugs like something out of Aladdin. He hadn't told any of them about Uncle Roger. He didn't want to hear, "You ain't got no business being there anyways," from his mother, and the twins were too young. Grandma Nora, though, would listen. She wouldn't think less of him. He'd played several gigs with Aiden since the wedding. He'd made close to $1,000 during the past month and given $850 to his mom. He'd bought a better practice mute and a shoulder rest and was saving for a car. He hadn't talked to his mom yet about not going to work at the grocery store or getting his GED. She seemed to have forgotten, which wasn't too surprising. If she did remember, he was hoping that she would relent if he showed her how much money he was making by playing his noise. He'd talked Aiden into playing at some clubs when they didn't have gigs. The money could be really inconsistent, but he loved having another excuse for performing. Tucked into the corner of the Alibi Club with Aiden and the rest of the quartet, serenading the white-haired old ladies from the Charlotte Flower Club as they forked up their chicken cordon bleu or their eggs Benedict, he felt weightless, almost as if he were about to levitate off the floor. No Uncle Roger, just the music. A mix of light classical and arrangements that Aiden had found online of the Beatles, Fleetwood Mac, and Barbra Streisand. Ray could play, and no one would tell him to stop. And they'd actually pay him for having fun. When his mom's Toyota pulled into Grandma Nora's driveway a little after 3 p.m., there Grandma Nora was, standing on the porch waving to them in her floor-length pink house dress, holding on to the walker that never seemed to slow her down. How she knew they would arrive right when they did was always magical, and she'd just laugh when Ray would ask her how she'd known. Ray's mom never called her ahead of time. Ray struggled out of the car, jittery from the drive, ears ringing from his brother's video game and his mother's complaints. And before he even hit the porch, the sense of the freshly baked pies hit him. Sweet potato, pecan, and blueberry. Grandma Nora would tell Ray that she baked the blueberry just for him. The blue tint of her thinning silver hair caught the November sunshine. He picked her up off the porch in a bear hug. She was barely 5 feet tall, probably didn't even weigh 100 pounds.
"Hey, baby! Look at you," she said in her southern drawl. "You've gotten so big."
Once he'd overheard one of his uncles say that Grandma Nora was so sweet that just hearing her talk could give you diabetes. Ray could listen to her all day.
"I'm good," he said. "You look great. I smell pie. You make me one?" "I sure did. I put it where nobody can get at it. Your Aunt Joyce tried to cut a piece, but I told her to put that pie down before I grab a switch. That's when I had to hide it. I told her that pie is for my favorite grandson."
The twins were thundering up the porch steps, but she kept her gaze on him, as if intuiting something amiss.
"How is school going? You still playing your fiddle?"
"Well,
Ray, get over here and get these bags,"
Ray's mother shouted, popping the Corolla's trunk.
"Be right back."
Ray returned to the car and began unpacking.
His mother, carrying her purse, went ahead.
How are you feeling?
She asked her mother.
Oh, I'm fine. My hips have been bothering me a little bit, but I'm good.
Y'all leave your grandma alone,
Ray's mother said to his siblings. They stopped climbing on her walker and trying to pull out her hair rollers. Grandma Nora was only inches taller than they were and ran inside, the door banging behind them. He knew they were beelining for the TV. A book bag over his shoulder and duffel bags under his arms, he unearthed the violin case.
Should he bring it into the house now while his grandmother was standing there, or sneak it in later so his mom didn't know?
Better to do it now so there would be less of a chance of sparking an argument about practicing. His mother had gone in already, but Grandma Nora had waited.
I am so glad you brought your fiddle. I want you to play me a song after supper.
She scooted toward the edge of the porch to meet Ray as he maneuvered up the steps.
Okay, I have a concert coming up. And guess what? I've been playing a lot of weddings, making real money.
I'm so proud of you,
she said, holding the door for him. She and her walker slid in after him. Thanksgiving Day was always a mixed bag. Sometimes his family barely ate because his aunts and uncles would drink and laugh for hours. Other times, rarely, admittedly, Uncle Larry and Uncle Thurston would get into an argument, usually about politics, and would jab at each other, index fingers extended. Once, Uncle Larry actually swept the countertop clear of the casserole dishes, furious with Uncle Thurston's needling him about his beloved Philadelphia Eagles defensive line. Luckily, this year would have less drama than usual. Only Aunt Joyce and her husband had made the drive. His mom's other siblings, Thurston, Larry, and Rochelle, had to cancel. Ray was grateful. Now he had more time to talk to Grandma Nora alone. On Thursday morning, the turkey was already in the oven when Ray volunteered to help Grandma Nora peel potatoes and slice squash. His mother and Aunt Joyce had gone to the store, ostensibly because they needed more collard greens, but in reality because one of the biggest family traditions was to keep Aunt Joyce out of the kitchen. So Ray and Grandma Nora stood side by side next to the sink when she said quietly,
Ray, baby, what's wrong?
Ray stopped mid-peel. He opened his mouth to answer, but the words would not come.
You know you don't have to pretend. You know you can talk to your grandma.
He took a deep breath. No one was nearby.
I was so happy. Then everything changed.
Suddenly, he was close to tears. He cleared his throat and dropped his head toward the potatoes.
What happened?
He tried for another deep breath, but his chest felt too full, as though he couldn't draw enough air into his lungs.
I played at a wedding last month. It was my first one. I actually got paid. $200.
That's wonderful.
Yeah, I thought so too. It was wonderful.
Then she waited, hands busy with the potatoes, not looking at him.
Then something happened.
He wasn't sure how to continue.
Grandma, have you ever had to deal with people that don't like you because, well, because, you know,
because I'm black,
she said. Ray stared down at his hands, at the potato peeling stuck to them.
I know it must have really hurt, she said, especially for a sweet boy like you. What did they say?
The words poured out of him almost as if he weren't speaking them.
He talked to me like I was an animal, like I was less than an animal. He hated me. I was so scared. I've had to deal with people that don't like me because they think I'm a jerk or because I get better grades than them. But it's never been about scam before. I didn't know what to do. He made me feel like I was nothing. Told me I wasn't supposed to be there. I played really well, and he told me I ruined his daughter's wedding. Grandma, what did I do?
She laid her hand on Ray's cheek. Her palm was warm,
slightly damp from the potatoes and so soft.
I want you to listen to me very carefully. That thing that happened to you was terrible. That man was sick. Nothing you do or say will ever change that. You can't think from one encounter that everyone thinks the same way he does. Don't get me wrong. There are plenty of people, men and women, young and old, that are just like him. He wasn't the first, and he won't be the last one to treat you that way. You are a fine young man who has so much to offer. You can't let them take that away from you. They will try and keep trying. So what do I do? You can beat them. You can win. You know how?
He shook his head.
You work twice as hard, even three times, for the rest of your life. It's not fair, but that's how it is. Some people will always see you as less than they are, so you have to be twice as good as them.
I don't think I can do that.
You're already doing it,
she said, her voice so low he could barely hear it.
You promise me one thing, you hear me? You stay the same sweet Ray that Grandma loves so much. You work harder than they do, and you stay sweet. When you begin to hate them just because they hate you, you turn into them, and then they win. Grandma can't have that. You just have to be true to your own sweet self and not let them change you.
But what do I do?
He felt so defeated. He couldn't win against this. No matter how nicely he dressed or how politely he spoke, his very existence would ruin the wedding.
Just what I said. You work twice as hard. You hold your head up high, and you keep doing what you do. You get good grades. You play your music. You find your goal, and you go after it. You be proud of who you are. You never, ever forget that your grandma is proud of you. So proud, her heart could just about burst from it. Don't you ever apologize for being who you are, or let someone make you feel bad for being black.
He could feel something inside him thaw. Something he hadn't even known was frozen.
Has it happened to you?
Oh, my Lord, yes. Grandma's dealt with them people all her life. It don't stop because you get old. I seen some terrible things. And I heard of some even worse things. I prayed all my life that my children would never have to go through what I did. I could tell you stories that you wouldn't believe. One day, baby, maybe I'll tell you.
I'm so sorry.
Don't be sorry. It's an ugly part of life, but that's how things are. Probably how they always will be. You just work hard and be your own sweet self. You hear me? You stand up for yourself, but always respectfully. I want you to remember that. You stand up, you respect yourself, and you be respectful. That's how you win.
She gave him a hug. He closed his eyes and drew her near, breathed in her smell of lavender and potato peels.
Now, when you going to play something for your grandma?
Ray drew in a shaky breath and could feel the air at the bottom of his lungs reaching a place that was suddenly open again. He said,
I'll play for you right after dinner.
You know my pop-pop used to play fiddle, don't you? I loved hearing him when I was a little girl. That's where you get your talent from. I keep telling your mama that.
Dinner went well, without his uncles around to egg each other on. Everyone complimented Ray's mom on the turkey, a complicated recipe involving apple cider, orange juice, and cloves, so she was glowing with pride. The table almost disappeared beneath the plates of fluffy mashed potatoes, seasoned with butter and garlic, the omnipresent collard greens and cranberry sauce, the homemade butter for the cornbread. There was ham and black-eyed pea stuffing. Everyone ate everything except the sliced squash. It was always a mystery why Grandma Nora insisted on slicing squash
baking it, and serving it up on everyone's plate every year, only to have no one touch it. This year was no different. As they were finishing, Grandma Nora said in her unmistakable slow southern drawl,
"Ray, baby, when you gonna play a song for your grandma?"
"Of course," he said, pushing himself back from the table. "I can play you a few songs from my concert, and maybe I can play my audition piece for you too." He gathered up everyone's plates, picked clean except for the squash.
"Lord, don't nobody want to hear that noise?"
Ray's mom said, taking another swallow of her wine as Ray went out into the kitchen.
"You still play the violin?"
Aunt Joyce said with genuine interest. Aunt Joyce took after her mother, a shade over 5 feet tall and very petite. Her hair was pulled back into a ponytail. Aunt Joyce loved a good laugh, and her single dimple was always noticeable when she smiled, which was all the time. He had two pies in hand, the pecan and his favorite blueberry.
"Yep, I'm still playing. When I was a little girl, my pop-pop would always sit us down and play that fiddle. I used to love hearing him play. You know he was a freed slave and..."
"Mama, please," Aunt Joyce said. "We heard you tell this story a million times."
"You hush,"
Grandma Nora said, waving her hand to silence Aunt Joyce. Ray's mother chuckled.
"I could see that one coming a mile away. Baby, your great-great-pop-pop tried to teach my daddy to play. He gave his fiddle to my daddy and told him to teach his babies music. But nobody ever learned to play. I've always been sad about that. My pop-pop loved that fiddle."
Aunt Joyce reached for the wine bottle.
"You still have it?" "Yes, girl. Don't you remember when you were kids how I tried to get y'all to play?"
For the past 18 years, Ray had been coming to Grandma Nora's house at least once a year. He'd heard that story of Pop-Pop and the fiddle even before he'd started playing. Maybe, now he couldn't remember, he'd first gotten interested in the violin because Grandma Nora talked about it all the time. And yet, unaccountably, nobody had ever asked Grandma Nora if she still owned it. How had that never, not once, come up? Ray's hand seemed suddenly clumsy, unable to pass the pie plates around. He dropped a fork and scrambled under the table to find it.
"Yes, Mama, we remember,"
Ray's mom said. She and Aunt Joyce burst out laughing.
"Your mama and your Aunt Joyce never tried to play,"
Grandma Nora said to him as he emerged with the fork.
"They just didn't want to. They thought they was too cute to play an instrument."
"Where is it now?" he said.
"It's up there somewhere in the attic," she said. "Told you I never got rid of it."
As Ray went up to his room to retrieve his school violin, he heard his mom say,
"Well, I ain't trying to hear all that noise. Come on, Joyce, let's go sit in the living room. And bring that bottle."
The rest of the family followed them out. So he and his grandmother were alone when he played for her, starting with Rosa Medre from The Wedding, and then on to Yezu, Joy of Man's Desiring, Corelli's Christmas Concerto, Jingle Bells, and even the first half of L'Inverno. When at last he drew his bow across the strings in a final tremulous finish, she did her best to leap out of her seat as she applauded him.
"Come here and let me give you a hug. That was beautiful. You sounded just like Pop-Pop."
"I hit a bunch of wrong notes."
"Oh, you hush. It was beautiful. Just beautiful."
As he slid the violin back into his case, he said as casually as he could,
"Grandma, you really still have your Pop-Pop's fiddle?" "I sure do. It's up in that attic somewhere. We never threw nothing away. And I know your granddaddy didn't get rid of it. I wouldn't have let him."
"Would you mind if I saw it? I've never seen a fiddle that old." She laughed.
"You've been in that attic. There's probably 50 years of I don't know what all piled on top of it.
Could I look, though?
Well, sure, you can look.
Pop-Pop's fiddle haunted Ray for the rest of the evening. As his mother, Aunt Joyce, and Grandma Nora drank wine, told stories, and laughed so loud that they kept Ray awake, he could think of little else. What did it look like? Pop-Pop died sometime in the 1930s. What happens to violins when they've sat for 70 or 80 or 90 years in an attic? Probably it was warped and ruined from the heat. But he could look, hold a part of his heritage. He imagined playing to his grandmother on Pop-Pop's fiddle, and couldn't imagine a sweeter gift for her. Later, Ray walked with her to her bedroom, helped her into bed. She was so tiny, so frail. He could pick her up almost with one arm. His heart ached with love for her, for the way her hand reached up and touched his cheek, so gentle, so warm. He put her walker off to the side, went back to kiss her.
Thank you again for tonight, baby. You made Grandma so happy.
I'm glad I could do it. You sleep well.
I love you. You know that?
I love you too, he said to her,
and realized in a flash that although he said those words fairly frequently, to his mom, sometimes to the twins, this time he understood how much they could mean. His heart ached with love.
Good night,
he told her, and turned off the light. Next morning, before breakfast, on the upstairs hall landing, Ray grabbed the pull string, and a cloud of dust poured down with the folded attic stairs. When had someone last been up here? He climbed. At the top, he felt along the wall for a light switch. Then, waving his hands in front of him, he ventured forward. Almost immediately, a pull chain hit him in the face. He yanked. Bright light shone forth. He groaned aloud. The attic ran the entire length of the house, branched into alcoves, front and back. In the nearest corner, a bed sagged under a faded quilt. Ray seemed to remember that one of his uncles used to tell him stories of how he would bring his dates up here. Except for the small space around the bed, the attic was filled with all kinds of everything. Lamps stacked on dishes, chairs crawled over more chairs, spindles poked out like needles. Chests and TVs crouched in front of what looked like an old Victrola, on top of which a stereo with one corner bashed in sat deteriorating. And among and between and below all of them, boxes, an endless sea, piled from floor to ceiling. How would he even find something like a violin? It could be anywhere, in anything. It could be propped behind that cradle, or tucked inside the carpet padding. He lifted the flap of a nearby box. Nesting china teacups peered back at him. He'd never find Pop-Pop's fiddle. He'd need a system. Given that the fiddle had been in the attic for as long as it had, in all likelihood it would be in one of the back corners, far from the door, with newer junk piled on top. He clambered over boxes and under hanging garden hoses to the far end of the attic. And then he systematically opened box after box, sifting through piles of clothes, groping under a dressmaker's dummy, pulling open each cabinet drawer, even if he had to shift the whole cabinet to get to it.
Ray, a voice wafted up. Rayquan, what are you doing up there?
Looking for Pop-Pop's fiddle?
What?
He had to repeat himself two or three times to be heard.
No, you ain't. You're coming down here right now, his mother bellowed.
As Ray wedged his way back across the attic's battlefield, he could hear his mother and grandmother below.
Mama, why you get him started on that? You let that boy alone. He's fine. Are you and Joyce taking the kids shopping?
No, they're staying here, and Ray's going to mind them. We're going to get you a new dress. We're sick of seeing you in that one. Ain't nothing wrong with my dress.
You better get you some new shoes. Those you're wearing look like they've been run over by a truck. Mama, get you a pretty pair. You got nice feet.
By then, Ray was standing in front of them.
Hey, baby, his grandmother said. Ain't you something?
You are filthy, his mother observed.
What? He said. What did you want? His grandmother said,
You got to get you some breakfast before you try chasing down that fiddle.
His mother rolled her eyes and sighed, but did not contradict her mother. All that morning and well into the afternoon, Ray searched. At one point, he found a few boxes of piano music, so he figured he was getting close. Beneath a pile of moth-eaten coats, four huge boxes lurked. Inside, he found more coats. He lifted out each one, shook it. How many coats do people need in Georgia? His search did turn up one artifact, though. Under one of the far eaves, in the top drawer of a shiny yellow dresser with green knobs, an old tan envelope sat on a pile of 1981 tax returns. Ray was about to close the drawer and move on to the next when he deciphered Leon Marks in rough pencil scrawled across the back of the envelope. Leon Marks, he knew, was his grandmother's grandfather, Pop-Pop. He searched carefully through the dresser and the surrounding area, but did not find the violin. After 2:30, he had to take a bathroom break. His grandmother was in the living room watching a soap opera.
I found a lot of stuff, but no fiddle, he told her. Are you sure it's up there?
She held out her hand to him, not seeming to mind that his right arm was covered in some kind of thick, gluey dust with blackened cobwebs across his knuckles.
It's up there. Your granddaddy put it up there years ago. You hungry? I can fix you some lunch.
I did find something, though.
He handed her the envelope with Pop-Pop's name on it.
Oh, baby, you found this?
She turned it around and around in her hands, looking up at him, but making no effort to open the envelope.
I thought you might want it. Looks like Pop-Pop's papers.
It sure is, she said. That's exactly what this is.
I'm going to go back and look some more, he said. I'll be back down in a little while.
You be careful, you hear me? It's in an alligator skin case. The handle is a little loose, so be careful how you pick it up.
He lost track of time, lost himself in the rhythm of unearthing a pile, going through each section one piece at a time, putting the pile back.
Get down here, his mother was yelling up at him again. You get down here right this minute.
In a sec, he called.
I said right now. It's after 9 and we got pizza. You wasted enough time on this foolishness.
He looked back at the stack he'd half-finished processing, clambered downstairs, covered in dust and cobwebs. His mother was tapping her fake nails, now silver and red, on the wall.
No,
she said.
What do you mean, no?
I mean no. You ain't coming down here like that. You go take you a shower and get changed. Right this second.
After he showered and changed, he gulped down 2 mushroom slices, folded a third, and, chewing, started back up the stairs to the attic.
Uh-uh, no you don't, his mother said. You been up there enough. I think Mama got rid of that thing years ago and forgot about it,
Aunt Joyce said, taking another sip of her wine.
You remember when she threw away your sweater with the clouds on it? Girl, I was so mad. You remember that?
What time are we getting on the road? Ray asked.
8:30. You go up and pack.
8:30? Can we leave a little later?
No. You know I don't want to hit traffic.
He knew that tone and knew not to argue. After kissing his grandmother goodnight, he set his alarm for 6 a.m., There was that one area under the eaves, not too far from the piano music, where he was now convinced the fiddle had to be hiding. He could take one more look before they left. He was up before the alarm clock.
The fiddle was not under the eaves. It felt like only moments before his mother was calling for him. 8 a.m. already. Downstairs, his grandmother was waiting.
You find it?
No, ma'am.
Well, you sure did look for it. I'm proud of you, baby.
I just wanted to see it, he said softly.
It ain't going anywhere. Don't you worry about that. I told you,
his mother said.
It's probably not there.
I don't think I ever saw it, Aunt Joyce said.
Not ever. Hush, both of you,
Grandma Nora said. Ray gave his grandmother a tight hug. She hugged him right back.
I'll see you soon, baby.
And then, in a low voice right in his ear,
it's gonna be okay. You just remember what we talked about. You hear me?
I know, Grandma, Ray said. Respect and be sweet.
That's right, she said. You're already working twice as hard.
I'll remember, Ray said. Later, in the car, his mother asked,
What did Mama say to you as we were leaving?
Oh, he said. She just told me she loved me. And went back to staring out the window. Chapter 8. Holiday Excavations, December. December, with its final exams, winter concert, and practicing for regional auditions, left Ray barely time to sleep. He showed up at school early to practice his violin, and then again at lunchtime and at study hall. His construction job had ended, but he hadn't applied to bag groceries. He didn't tell his mother. The day after the winter concert, his orchestra teacher, Mr. Stinson, announced to the class, If you're auditioning for regionals, I'll hear you today. 12 students, including Aiden, Ray, and Mark Jennings, were trying out. One by one, they played L'Inverno. After the other students played, Mr. Stinson rose to return to his office. Ray called after him, Mr. Stinson, are you going to hear me? Mr. Stinson looked at him blankly. Why? He said. Just the one word, but it boomed in Ray's ears. He vowed that he'd show Mr. Stinson what he could do. Ray would play twice as well as the others at regionals. Ray stood motionless as the other students packed up to leave, as Mark bumped his shoulder, laughing, as Mr. Stinson disappeared into his office. Only when all the other students, even Aiden, had left, did Ray bend down to place, so gently, his school violin in its battered case. A black kid with a school violin, no private teacher, no vast wellspring of talent. Why would Mr. Stinson waste his time on such a kid? Why? Because the black kid could play his ass off. That's why. 2 days later, Aiden texted him the details of 4 gigs lined up over Christmas. Rather than text, Ray called him. His lips had trouble forming the words. He sucked in a breath. I can't do it.
What? Why not?
I had to turn my instrument in, remember? It's the school's. I don't have a violin. I'm gonna buy an instrument over break. A nice one. I've been saving up, Ray said. I should be getting some Christmas money. He'd been saving up for Christmas break to go shopping. With what his mother hadn't taken, and maybe some money from Grandma Nora and his relatives, he'd been planning on getting a step-up instrument. There was a good music store at the mall near Grandma Nora's. They returned to Georgia on December 23rd, and Grandma Nora was again waiting for them on the porch. He sprang from the car and into her arms.
It's great to see you, he said. You're a sight for sore eyes, baby. I'm so proud of your concert.
He'd called her after the winter concert, told her how well the evening had gone, how much he loved playing in front of an audience. She was the only one in his family who'd even asked. He'd also called her last week when someone at the Crocodile Club had tipped him $20. Now she shuffled into the house where the adults were gathered in the living room
discussing plans for the next few days.
The Eagles are playing the Cowboys tomorrow, Uncle Larry was saying. That's going to be a good game. Don't come in there messing with me. The living room is a no-talking zone.
Ray hovered behind Grandma Nora, who'd seated herself with a sigh in her huge paisley corduroy lazy boy. It almost swallowed her up. He'd put one hand on her shoulder, and now her hand fluttered up, patting his. After a few minutes of listening to his uncles berating the Cowboys and Aunt Joyce and his mom arguing about a television show they both followed, Ray murmured to his grandmother,
"Can I go up and look?"
She smiled up at him. She knew what he was looking for.
"You sure can."
"Thank you."
He kissed her cheek and slid out of the living room up to the second floor hallway. He yanked the cord, and the attic stairs tumbled down. He started right where he'd left off a month ago. If he was looking for old Stevie Wonder albums, he would have hit the jackpot. And how many clothes did one family need to keep? How many bags of stuffed animals? That fiddle meant connection. If only he could find the instrument, he'd connect with his grandmother and her grandfather. This was his gift to her. He never thought of owning the fiddle. It was his grandmother's, and he would never take it from her. But finding it, holding it, having Grandma Nora tell him that he looked just like her pop-pop standing there playing his fiddle, that would be worth all the dust. He was on the far side of the attic, sorting through a stack of boxes higher than his head, when he heard Aunt Joyce shouting his name.
"Ray, come on down. It's dinner time, and you need to watch the kids."
He stood still, as if she wouldn't know he was up here, as if she'd just give up and go away.
"You hear me? Ray, get down here right now."
Reluctantly, he left the box stack and threaded through the attic, back down into the main house.
"Boy, you are a hot mess," she observed. "Go wash up and change your shirt."
He lifted the attic stairs back into position.
"It's not there, sweetie," she said gently. "Nobody's ever seen that thing. Your grandpa probably sold it years ago and never told her. She said it's up there. She wants to believe it's up there. She's an old lady. She gets confused."
He didn't know what to say.
"You know, if you did find it, you can't have it, right?"
Aunt Joyce went on. He realized only then that his family must think that he wanted it for himself. He tried to tell her, but she was saying,
"We don't know what all is in this house. When Mama passes, we'll have to sort it all out, including that fiddle, if it's even still here." "I just wanted to see it," he said, meeting her eyes. "I just wanted to play it like she wants me to, like her pop-pop. I just want to play it for her."
He finished searching the attic on Christmas Eve, before they left for the annual Christmas picture at the mall. He refolded the flaps on the last box in the last corner. Pop-Pop's fiddle wasn't up there. Grandma Nora had assured him it was. An alligator skin case with a loose handle. There was no way she was just a confused old lady like Aunt Joyce had said. She remembered the loose handle, hadn't she? She knew she'd never gotten rid of it, didn't she? Had she been lying to him, laughing at him all this time, snickering as she listened to him thumping around for all those hours? His misery and confusion made it impossible for him to speak on the car ride to the mall. When they arrived, as soon as the picture was taken, he went off on his own to the music store. Violins, guitars, and other stringed instruments hung like pinned butterflies against an entire wall. There were only three brands of violins to choose from. The cheapest was $500, a shiny version of his school violin, which was unacceptable. The step-up violin was a Roth that hung behind the counter with a Christmas sale price tag of $1,049. The clerk, a scrawny guy in his mid-30s, kept scowling at Ray. Ray had $930 in his bank account.
Could he ask Grandma Nora to loan him a little extra? She'd probably give him $50 as a Christmas present. She'd done that in the past, so he only needed a little more. He could pay her back out of money from the next gig with Aiden. Back at home, after the family finished eating, they trickled into the living room where the Christmas tree twinkled. Dozens of gifts poured from the tree skirt. As usual, Grandma Nora sat in her lazy boy. Also as usual, each of Grandma Nora's children chose two gifts, one to give to a sibling and one to give to each of their children. After opening his presents, a pale blue dress shirt, three pairs of pants, several pairs of socks, and a fine haul of Amazon gift cards, he watched the littler kids open Nintendo games and remote control cars, screaming in excitement and searching for batteries. When the living room was a sea of discarded wrapping paper, ribbon, and Christmas cards, the adults all stood to give Grandma Nora her annual family gift. This year, it was a new set of cookware. Grandma Nora, still in her chair, beamed.
Oh, thank y'all. I needed a new skillet.
All right, time for the game.
Uncle Thurston reached for the remote. The younger kids, rejuvenated, were chasing one another. Aunt Joyce and Aunt Rochelle headed toward the dining room to clean up. Ray, loaded with his presents, headed upstairs. Maybe he'd watch a YouTube video of the New York Philharmonic playing Rimsky-Korsakov's Capriccio Espanol. Ray wanted to play the violin solos in that piece. The volume level had increased in the house, so Ray was almost out the door before he heard Grandma Nora, who'd apparently been shouting in her tiny voice,
"Hang on a minute. I have one more present to give out. Hang on. One more. Wait, everyone,"
Aunt Joyce bellowed. Ray looked back from the hallway. With some difficulty, Grandma Nora was reaching under her chair. One of his cousins tried to help, and she gently swatted his hand away. She pulled out a long, slender box wrapped in green and red striped paper.
"What's that?" Aunt Rochelle said. "Don't you worry about it. It's for Ray."
Everyone turned to stare at Ray, who stared back cluelessly.
"Mama has a gift for you, son."
Uncle Larry, standing behind him, elbowed Ray in the side.
"Go get it. Game starting in 2 minutes.
"You didn't have to give me anything." "I know, baby. But you earned this. Here."
The paper peeled away. Beneath was an alligator skin fiddle case, a dull blackish brown, gray with mildew. The handle was loose. Aunt Joyce said from somewhere behind him,
"Oh my God."
Was this possible? Was this a joke? Grandma would never play a joke this cruel. Gently, impossibly, he laid the case on the floor and stared at it for a moment before looking up at her. She was smiling.
"How? Go ahead. Open it."
Her eyes were shining. His aunts and uncles jockeyed for position. He reached out with hands that did not seem to belong to him, popped the two clasps, folded the top back. A fiddle lay there. Pop-Pop's fiddle. There in front of him. An excited babble of voices rang out. He heard only his mother.
"Raekwon, that ain't yours to keep."
Gently, he leaned down again, picked up the fiddle, lifted it into the air. He was actually holding Pop-Pop's fiddle.
"How do you like your new fiddle, baby?"
"Grandma, this isn't..."
"Hush, baby. It's yours now."
"Mama, you can't give him that."
"Nope, that thing is not leaving this house."
The voices swirled around them. But right then, there was only Ray and his grandmother.
"I can't take this. I just wanted to find it for you. I just wanted to play it for you." "I know you did. And now you will."
"It's yours," he said. "It's Pop-Pop's."
"It's yours now," she told him. "He'd want you to have it." I want you to have it.
Mama, Ray's mother said, scowling. What are you thinking?
Ray, baby, Grandma Nora said, take your fiddle and go into the kitchen, okay? I want you to play me that pretty song in a little while.
No one spoke as he reverently closed the case, carried it out of the room. Out of sight, he put his back to the wall, listened.
Every one of you hush, Grandma Nora was saying. If anybody says a word, I'm taking off my shoe and going upside your head with it. Your daddy and I tried to get every one of you to learn to play. All of you. Not a one of you would do it. It's mine, and I will give it to anybody I please. None of you has anything to say about it.
He needs to get this music out of his head and start thinking about a real job, his mother said. He's graduating from high school soon, and he don't know what he wants to do. He can't make a living as a musician, and he don't need no encouragement from you.
It's his life. He needs to start making his own decisions.
His own mistakes, more like.
He couldn't listen anymore. He left them arguing, set the case on the kitchen table. It didn't matter what they decided. For this moment, the violin lay in front of him, connecting him to his grandmother and to his past, and to a musical heritage he barely understood. Grandma Nora had told him that she wanted him to play tonight for her, but he saw immediately that was impossible. The tailpiece was cracked, two of the pegs had broken off, the bridge was badly warped, and the soundpost rattled around inside. Decades of mildew and built-up rosin coated the instrument in a whitish film. He rubbed at it, and his fingers came away black, but underneath was more caked-on rosin. There were more hairs lying inside the case than attached to the bow. But the violin's body was sound, not cracked or warped or eaten by insects. It could be fixed. He could take it to the music shop in the mall. Even if he couldn't keep it, he could play for her when he visited. Her gift to him would be his gift to her.
Ray, get in here,
his mother, voice sharp. He placed the fiddle back in the faded green cushion of the alligator skin case, returned to the living room.
Baby, said his grandmother, Pop-Pop's fiddle and his fiddle case both belong to you now. No, I will not be taking them back, and I better not find out that anybody tried to take them from you.
His mother had taken a step toward him when she saw him, but now she turned and rolled her eyes at Grandma Nora. She sighed.
But Mama, you hush. You heard what I said. Now you play something beautiful for us, she told him.
It needs to be fixed, he said. I can't play it till it's fixed. But I can take it tomorrow to that music store in the mall.
Tomorrow's Christmas, someone said. It'll be closed.
The day after then, Ray said. He never looked away from his grandmother. It was starting to sink in. He had a violin of his own.
Thank you, he said, leaning down and squeezing her so tightly she gasped. You're welcome, sweet Ray, she said when he released her. That's how much I love you, baby.
Later that night, after they'd all gone up to their rooms, Ray dialed Aiden's number.
Merry Christmas, bro. Good to hear from you. But your timing sucks. So is that New Year's gig still on? Yeah, but when you said you couldn't do it, I asked around. Chad's doing it. Are you serious? It's a $300 gig. I had to find someone. I have a violin now. I can do it. I already asked Chad. Don't get me wrong, I'd much rather play with you, but...
But nothing. Tell him he's fired. Tell him it's canceled. Tell him something. Let me do it.
That is so messed up. Chad's a flake, but I can't yank the gig from him. Chad doesn't give two shits about you. We're homies. You give me this gig, I'll owe you for life.
Aiden paused for a long while before saying, You know what?
Fuck Chad. I'll come up with something.
The day after Christmas, Ray was downstairs waiting when the first adult staggered in for breakfast. He asked Aunt Rochelle if she would give him a ride to the mall as soon as it opened. Ray didn't want to open a can of worms by asking his mother or his other relatives. Aunt Rochelle seemed indifferent about him receiving the fiddle, so she would be the least likely to give him any grief. When they got to the mall just after 10, the parking lot was mostly empty. Aunt Rochelle stopped off at a department store that had a huge sale sign in the front window, and Ray went on alone, violin case tight under his arm, straight to the music store. Behind the counter was the same scrawny young man with thin blonde hair and an even thinner mustache shadowing his lip who had been growling at him last time. His name tag, "Hi, my name is Eric, ask me about our holiday layaway plan," glittered red and silver. Ray laid the alligator skin case on the counter.
"I need to get some repairs done."
The clerk glanced up, then back down at his computer screen, kept typing. Ray waited a few moments.
"Hi."
"Excuse me? I need..."
"This ain't a pawn shop.
Get out." Ray stood there, confused.
"This is a music store," the clerk said, as if to a five-year-old. "We sell instruments. We don't buy them."
He never looked up.
"I need to have some repairs done on my violin."
Ray opened the case, showed him the violin as proof. "My name is Eric, ask me about our holiday layaway plan," stared at it like he'd never seen one before.
"Why you want to get it fixed? That thing is disgusting."
"It's been in storage and nobody's played it. I think the white is from all the rosin."
"Looks like mold."
Leaning over to peer more closely, the clerk snickered.
"Smells like mold, too.
What did you do to this thing?"
"Can't be fixed.
Anything else I can help you with?"
"It's going to need..."
"You deaf, too? I said it can't be fixed. We're done here."
He turned away from the counter, as if to head to the back room. A familiar feeling washed over Ray. He remembered what Grandma Nora said about respect.
Maybe this guy didn't know much about violins. "I need a new tailpiece, a set of strings, new pegs, the soundpost set, the bow rehaired, and a new bridge."
Eric gave an exaggerated sigh, then spoke with exaggerated slowness, everything overemphasized as if to a child or to someone deaf or to someone profoundly stupid.
"I told you it can't be fixed."
Ray stood very tall.
"It can't be fixed, or you won't fix it."
"What did you say? What did you just say to me?"
Ray took a deep breath.
"I need to have this violin repaired. This is a repair shop. I need you to fix it."
"Is that piece of shit even yours?"
Ray straightened. "Sir, I would like to have my violin repaired. I need a new bridge and tailpiece, a bow rehairing, and the strings and the soundpost adjusted. Can you do the work?" Eric went back to his computer, typed in some keys, but in a way that made Ray think he was tallying up numbers for the repair.
$337.
"Okay. How long will it take?"
"A week.
Maybe two."
Ray recoiled.
"A week? This isn't a long job. Do you have a lot of repairs ahead of it?"
"Do you want this piece of shit repaired or don't you?"
"Could you do it today? While I wait?"
Eric thought about it.
"It'll cost you an extra $100.
If only there were other music stores close by. If only Ray had a car. If only he were someone else.
"Okay," he said.
"You'll do it while I wait?"
"You have $437.
"Yes, I do."
"I want to see the money."
"Here's my debit card," Ray said. "You can take $200 out now, the rest when the repairs are done."
2 hours.
Eric slammed shut the case and took it to the back. When he returned, Ray was still waiting.
You need something else?
A receipt.
Eric wrote out a yellow check-in slip, smacked it on the counter, disappeared into the back room, hopefully to work on the violin's repairs. It was 10:18 a.m., 2 hours to go. Ray retreated outside, took a seat on a bench 20 feet from the music shop, between a Sbarro and a Gymboree. He pulled out his phone and played video games, his eyes on the shop, as if he expected Eric to slip out with the violin and disappear forever. Aunt Rochelle found him there, still waiting.
Did you get it fixed?
She settled herself with a sigh next to him on the bench, with two bulky department store bags at her feet. She was younger than his mother, with short cropped hair and heavier features. She tended to keep to herself and didn't engage with the family as much as the others, so he hadn't spent a great deal of time with her.
I had to drop it off, but he said he'd have it ready by 12:30. You want to get some lunch?
It's only 11:30.
Why don't we get some lunch while he's fixing it?
She repeated.
There's a Bob Evans across the parking lot, and they serve a mean sausage biscuit.
I'm not real hungry, he said, eyes on the music store.
You can leave it for a minute, she said. It ain't going anywhere.
He shrugged. She patted his leg, sat with him for a few more minutes, watching him as he watched the music store. Finally, she stood.
Okay, I'll be back.
She went to buy a dress she tried on earlier. At exactly 12:20, Ray went back inside. An older woman with gray hair and a faded, tired face was examining the electric keyboards against one wall, but turned to stare at him. He smiled at her, but she didn't smile back. Eric was at his post at the counter.
Yeah?
I'm here to pick up my violin.
Right. Your violin.
That thing is hardly a violin. Eric disappeared and soon returned with a violin case. While he processed Ray's debit card, Ray opened the case. The new pegs didn't match. The tailpiece was plastic. The strings had cheap red labels and cost $26. Ray knew the price since that's what he'd bought for the school instrument. He was no expert on repairs, but he knew he wasn't getting what he'd paid for.
Excuse me, do you carry Dominant brand strings?
Why?
I was expecting a set of Dominant strings for $437.
Ray could feel the woman watching both of them. Eric just stared for a moment and said,
Get the hell out of my store.
Why?
Ray said,
Because I don't like you. I don't like any of you. You come in here, never buy anything, and steal half my shit. You're always walking around like you own the world with your pants around your ass, but do you buy anything? No fucking way. You probably stole that piece of shit anyway. Get the fuck out before I call the cops.
Out of the corner of his eye, Ray saw Aunt Rochelle hesitating, 1 foot inside the shop. He thought she would come up, say something, but she didn't. She just waited as the clerk's words poured over him. But her presence was enough for him to lift his chin high, square his shoulders, and pack up the violin. As he left the store, he said,
Merry Christmas.
Neither Eric nor the older lady replied. Outside in the mall, Aunt Rochelle put her arm around his shoulders.
Asshole, she said.
Yeah,
he said, his heart still beating hard.
But I got it fixed. I can play it for Grandma today.
You really love that old thing, don't you?
Which old thing? The violin or Grandma?
They both laughed. Ray's was forced, but he tried to pretend he didn't care about what had just happened.
The violin, she said. Everybody loves Mama.
I really do love it, he confessed.
Perhaps it was the incident at the music store, but he found himself talking to her more than he ever had in the past.
I didn't want it for me, before. I just wanted to find it and play it for Grandma. But if she's given it to me, well, that just means so much. It means I won't have to play with the crappy school instruments anymore. I'm the only kid of all the juniors and seniors who doesn't have his own instrument.
You are?
Yeah. And all the other kids get private lessons, too. But that's okay. I know my mom doesn't get it.
Your mom's a good person, she said.
Yeah, he said without enthusiasm.
She doesn't like my playing, though.
Well, if you love doing it, don't let nobody stop you. You hear me?
You sound like Grandma, he said.
She stopped in the parking lot and gave him a two-armed hug, shopping bags swinging against his back.
I want to hear you play, too.
She didn't let him go.
You're a good boy. You know that?
He didn't know what to say, so he just hugged her. Why had he never noticed Aunt Rochelle before? He'd always just lumped her in with the rest of his aunts and uncles, but now he realized that she was a pretty cool lady. She saw him as something more than a babysitter for his younger cousins. He wanted to spend more time with her. When Ray and Aunt Rochelle got back to the house, Grandma Nora was sitting in her recliner in the living room.
Hey, baby. You get it fixed.
He took it from its case, showed her the repaired instrument.
Looks just like I remember, she said. All that white stuff. My pop-pop used to say it was good luck, all that white stuff. He called it good luck dust.
She chuckled quietly to herself, marveling.
I'd forgotten that.
Ray tucked the violin beneath his jaw and looked across the tailpiece over the bridge and past the fingerboard to the scroll. His own violin. His. Heavily coated with an extra thick coat of good luck dust, which was his too. With his right hand, he touched the bow to the string, rose into an A, and tuned the instrument, keenly making sure the A was a perfect 440. He pulled the bow from frog to tip, and the notes sang out clean, surprisingly piercing. Somehow, the act of playing that one note had cemented his ownership of the violin, and he could feel the muscles in his arm vibrate almost as if they were adjusting themselves to its sound.
You know what, baby? You look just like my pop-pop standing up there. I have chills. Look.
She showed him her arm, where a prickle of goose flesh rose on her thin skin.
I could swear he was standing up there. Sure brings back some sweet memories.
She smiled up at him. He played an F major scale to warm up, and his grandma applauded.
That was just a scale, he told her. Nothing to clap for.
I just love hearing you play. Wait a minute. Larry, Rochelle, Joyce, Thurston, y'all come in here. Ray is going to play for us on Pop-Pop's fiddle, she shouted.
His aunts and uncles came in from other parts of the house.
Oh, Lord. Mama, please, Ray's mom said, edging back down the hall. Girl, you stand right there. This won't take long. Ray is gonna play.
Ray closed his eyes as he lifted the violin more tightly to his jaw. He'd have to get a shoulder rest sometime soon. A nice one. No sponge for Pop-Pop's violin. But that would wait. He touched the bow to the E string and began L'Inverno. No written music, he should have gotten his music. But he knew the notes. The correct fingerings were effortless, and he switched smoothly from third to fifth, then back to first position. The melody started slow, in the night, a plucking of strings, snowflakes falling dreamily one flake at a time. And then a burst of cold air poured down on them, and flakes eddied, biting in the chill, the north wind coursing through the living room. Dawn came, light glistening off a frozen pond. A bird flew down, hopped on new snow, looking for seed. Bare trees reached to the sky, achingly blue in the cold. Skaters swirled on ice,
Skiers coasted down long, cold runs, then back to the house, to the warmth, to chocolate thawing on the stove and mittens steaming in front of a fire. He painted all this for them in the air, this first time, with the music from Pop Pop's fiddle of his own violin washing over them. How glorious this was, to touch them, to make them hear, to give them this gift. Pop Pop's violin was different, easier to play. Maybe because it was his? Maybe he was channeling Pop Pop? Maybe he was just so deeply touched, playing for his grandmother who was swaying there in her chair, eyes closed, a huge smile wreathing her lips. The last 8 measures that had given him such trouble now seemed easy, smooth. And then before he was ready, he played the last note. He held it as long as he could, the bow trembling in his hand. Grandma Nora pulled herself from her recliner, clapping so hard that 2 of her pink curlers came loose and bounced to the floor. Moments later, the rest of his family joined in. It was assuredly Ray's imagination, but holding the violin in his trembling left hand and his right hand sweaty on the bow, as he looked out at the sea of faces, another figure grinned back at him. A small man, shorter than his mother, just behind Aunt Joyce, very thin, with hunched shoulders and deep-set almond-shaped eyes. The shadow of the brim of a hat shaded his forehead. It was almost as if Ray could feel his blessing, his pride, and his exhilaration beaming at him. A moment later, when Ray blinked, the figure was gone.
"Whoa, that boy is good!"
Larry patted Ray's shoulder. The others sang out his praises, too. But he had eyes only for her. Tears rolling down her face, hitting her hands together so hard he was afraid that they would shatter.
"Baby, I am so proud of you. Your pop-pop would be proud of you, too. I just can't believe how good you play."
And then, almost by accident, effortless, the thought crept into his head, and he listened to it for the first time. "I can do this.